This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode, Social Media's Infodemic. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. The coronavirus pandemic has led to an incredible amount of wrong information on social media. I mean, who didn't have a Facebook friend who shared that plandemic YouTube video a few weeks ago? If you somehow escaped it, it was a documentary-style conspiracy video that went viral but then was taken down. Some health experts say we are facing an infodemic with so many wild fabrications. The coronavirus was created by Bill Gates, or it's spread by 5G radio waves. It can be cured by drinking bleach. But this has also given researchers an opportunity to learn more about how misinformation is spread on social media. Liz Tung has more.
Fake news is nothing new, but arguably, we have never seen the high-speed spread of misinformation like this. So my first question for researchers is, why? What is it about the coronavirus that seems to have tripped this giant worldwide game of telephone? According to Kate Starbird, co-founder of the Center for an Informed Public at the University of Washington, it's not as unusual as you might think.
So rumors are actually like a typical part of a crisis event. It's natural human behavior. You know, something's happened, you're not sure what's happened. Early on in the event, you don't have perfect information.
Let's say, for example, you've just been in an earthquake. You felt the ground shaking, heard the sirens, but you don't know a lot of the big stuff yet. How much damage there was, what roads are blocked, where you can go for help. So you go to see your neighbor, and the two of you start talking.
So you're trying to figure these things out, and then actually you feel anxiety because you might have to take certain actions based on what's happened, and you need information. And under those conditions, what we do as humans is we try to resolve that uncertainty and that anxiety. We try to find that information, and we try to find people and talk to people and share information and come up with explanations. And those explanations, we talk about it as collective sense making.
And now, and for the last few months, the entire world has been collective sense making together online, which is kind of a big deal. Because if you think about it, this is really the first global disaster we've experienced since the rise of social media. That means rumors can fly from one corner of the earth to the other in a matter of seconds.
It's truly global.
That's Kathleen Carley. She's a professor of computer science at Carnegie Mellon, where she also runs the Center for Informed Democracy and Social Cybersecurity.
So that means people around the globe are spreading disinformation, and it will get picked up by people in other countries.
Usually, disaster-related rumors start dying away once you get some answers. But that hasn't been the case with the coronavirus. Uncertainty about how the virus works, where it came from, what governments are doing about it, a lot of that's still up in the air. The result? Rumors. And these germs of misinformation are spreading just as fast, if not faster, than an actual virus. The problem is we can't exactly social distance on social media. Kate Starbird, the first expert we heard from, says we're at a moment when the world is more connected than ever, but we haven't yet developed the digital hygiene to fully protect ourselves.
It's hitting at this moment where our information systems are already sort of characterized by persistent, pervasive misinformation, disinformation, and the strategic manipulation of these online spaces. So the combination is like the natural process of trying to figure things out is, you know, we're all rumoring, we're spreading misinformation.
And even though we're all facing the same threat, we're not all coming at it from the same perspective. There can be miscommunications from one language to another, from one culture to another, and even intentional deception between groups that may not have each other's best interests at heart.
And then at the same time, we're open to this exploitation, not just from someone who's coming from a neighbor, you know, the next town over, like, which would have been a historical crisis, but people can exploit us from all parts of the world. People can be exploiting other people right now. And so it's just really this kind of perfect storm.
So the big question is, who's spreading all this misinformation and why? Kathleen says, in a general sense, it's coming from all over the world. Some rumors have been traced back to conspiracy theorists, some to so-called black news sites. Even the Chinese government and some of our own politicians have gotten in on the act. But in general, Kathleen says, the origins of rumors are really tough to find.
So two things that are extremely hard in social media. One is attribution, that is knowing exactly who started it. And the second one is knowing motivation.
Kathleen says knowing motivation is important for making a crucial distinction. Crucial, anyway, in her field of research. What counts as misinformation and what counts as disinformation?
Disinformation typically means information that is inaccurate and that is intentionally spread by those who know that it is not accurate. Whereas misinformation is inaccurate, but it is spread by those who don't know that it is inaccurate.
Like, for instance, your mom sending you a message to get cash out of the ATM because Uncle Bob's accountant says there's going to be a run on banks. That is misinformation. But someone else sharing the same information with the intention of creating financial havoc in the U.S., that's what we call disinformation. Like Kathleen said before, it can be almost impossible figuring out which one you're looking at sometimes. But researchers have been able to find clues by tracking the propagation patterns of individual rumors. In fact, that's what Kathleen and her team were doing when they made a startling discovery.
So a lot of the misinformation that is being spread by bots.
In fact, Kathleen and her colleagues have analyzed 200 million tweets about coronavirus, and they found that more than half of them are likely coming from bots. On top of that, 41 of the 50 most influential retweeters, also bots. What all this means is that a lot of these rumors are actually orchestrated campaigns of disinformation. So how much of that bad information is making its way to our screens? Kate Starbridge says it's different for everyone. It depends on a bunch of factors, including your search history and what you tend to click on.
There's sort of the dynamics of how we organize our lives online, both like how we choose our friend relationships and how we seek out information that aligns with our biases. And now we can find all sorts of different kinds of information that aligns with those biases. How the recommendation algorithms work sometimes to send us more of what we like to keep us coming back. There's something about our information environment right now which is highlighting old vulnerabilities and perhaps taking advantage of them in new ways.
And the results can be dangerous. Like, for instance, the people who've been setting 5G cell towers on fire after hearing they're causing coronavirus. Kathleen Carley says there's longer-term risk, too.
First, it reduces your trust in institutions. So it reduces your trust in the medical community and governments and so on. And when you get that reduction in trust, you know, chaos can come out of it.
For instance, protests against social distancing. Or people who are spreading or even dying from coronavirus because they tried to treat it by eating bananas.
So it can cost money, it can cost lives, you know, and it reduces trust in your institutions.
Of course, not all rumors are dangerous or worthy of the work it takes to debunk them. One of Kathleen's favorites is
that because of social distancing, the pollution in Italy has gone down so much that the dolphins and the swans have returned to the canals of Venice.
I also thought it was true. Unfortunately, it wasn't. But it also doesn't really matter. What we need to focus on, experts say, are the rumors that are actually causing harm. Whether that harm has to do with physical health or something more abstract. For example, Kathleen and her colleagues have discovered that a lot of the bots spreading false information about COVID-19 are also sowing political division among the American public. And that could have serious consequences, including for the upcoming presidential election. But there's a kind of silver lining to the current infodemic. It's given researchers more data than they could have dreamed of to help them zero in on, and hopefully stop, misinformation campaigns before they get too far. Even social media giants that up till now have been pretty hands-off when it comes to policing content are starting to join in. Reddit, Google, Twitter, YouTube, even Facebook have all pledged to crack down on misinformation, all thanks to what we've seen happen during the coronavirus. It's raising the alarm of the kind of damage misinformation can do on a major scale. Kate Starbird hopes it can be a wake-up call for regular people, too.
I think there are things we can do to become less vulnerable, to be aware of how our political biases affect how we interpret information and choose what to share or not, to be aware more generally of where information is kind of manipulating us emotionally, and just be a little bit more reflective and more slow in how we share things is a way for us to become, you know, less vulnerable. And it's not just less vulnerable individually. This is a huge system where we're all sharing information together. And so we can become stronger collectively and make for a healthier information space by all just being a little bit more aware that we're all vulnerable and taking actions to address that vulnerability.
That story was reported by Liz Tong.